grenades, 4 or 5 at most, hurling homemade hand grenades. After 2 tours of duty, Uncle Sugar returned him to the States. Many in his platoon were not so lucky. And with his mom and dad dead and Betsy Jane married with 2 kids, he had left Missouri for the promise of sunshine and prosperity the Beach Boys had sung about. Settling in Los Angeles, he grew his hair out, fell in with the Make Love Not War crowd, and never let any of the hippie chicks he was banging or long hairs he was scoring dope off of know he was one of the baby murderers they so disdained. One day he woke up, shook the drug hangover off, and walked back into the real world. Within days, he was pouring cement for the construction business, which was just the sort of mindless labor he craved. But terrible nightly dreams began taking him back to the jungle and the rice paddies, and he would wake up shivering, sweating, not even wanting to try to go back to sleep. So he would drag into work half dead and perform his job half-assed. A rash of illnesses followed, including fatigue and depression, causing him to lose one job after another. The doctors at the Veterans Hospital had some kind of term for it, delayed post-combat stress fatigue syndrome or some such shit, and put him on a variety of antidepressants. Drugs again. But these, whether uppers or downers, only made his constant fatigue worse. Drinking helped numb the hurt, but didn't do much for his job prospects. Ben wanted to work, he really did. And yeah, he drank some, but he was no rummy. He had never been one to drink on the job. But even if he felt better and his fatigue went away, who would hire him now? Now that so many years had slipped through his fingers and he was pushing 50. It was a little after 6 o'clock in the evening, and dusk was beginning to sneak in like Kong from the east, the buildings casting long shadows over the city. Ben had been there since 4 that afternoon, to catch the older executives slipping away early for the day, heading out to the links for a round of golf before dinner. He generally did well with them, especially if he mentioned he was a Vietnam vet. These were his classmates, from the late 60s and early 70s. They looked at him and saw the shell of their brother who got killed over there, or their best friend they'd lost contact with 1 million years ago. So they would hand him a buck or two, perhaps feeling guilty that they, too, hadn't gone off to that senseless war, as if Ben wouldn't have stayed home if he could. But Ben had learned that the professionals who left later, between 5 and 6 o'clock, younger ones in their 20s and early 30s, Generation X, wasn't that what they were called, were a cold, callous lot. The only thing he ever got from them was a blankly contemptuous stare, if they bothered to look at him at all. He was ready to call it quits for the day when a young woman he'd seen before, wearing a fetching, form-fitting red suit with an oversized collar and straight skirt, stepped out of the building onto the sidewalk. A smile tickled his stubbly face. There was always time to look at this one. Not that good-looking women were exactly rare in this part of the world, but there was something about her, something that reminded him of the girls he dated, of Betsy Jane and the back seat of his Chevy Nova. She had shoulder-length auburn hair and pink satiny skin that seemed to glow. Her face was youthful, her features exquisite, as beautiful as any of the Hollywood wannabes he'd seen on these streets. She paused in front of the building, looking up Wilshire Boulevard, then down. He remained where he was, leaning against the building, too intimidated to ask her for money. No, not intimidated. Embarrassed. It was goddamn hard to embarrass a homeless beggar like him, but this vision, this reminder of a life lost, or anyway misspent, made him ashamed. Made it all his own fault, somehow. Then something extraordinary happened.